Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. A quote appears on a black screen. These last few days are among the happiest I've ever ignored. Doug Kenny. Netflix presents a Netflix original film.
In the chapel of
a boy sits alone in the back of a car, gazing out the window. 1958. A group of cheerleaders practice on a field. Holding a tennis racket, the boy puts on thick glasses to see them more clearly. He watches two kids on bikes, a man mowing his lawn, and neighbors chatting. A Boy Scout troop walks past a sign, Chagrin Falls Memorial Park. In the passenger seat, the boy's mother cries. Wearing all black, she lifts a hanky to her nose as the father steers the car past a cemetery. The boy looks out at gathering mourners as they park at a curb. Two men open the car doors. The father and mother step out, but the boy stays put in back.
Doug? Come on! Doug!
You can stay in the car for all I care.
Now, a man in his 70s.
You really want to start there? Nobody cares about my fucked up family. Everybody has a fucked up family. Okay, I mean, there's got to be a better way to start a movie.
Well, could you just introduce yourself?
My name is Doug Kenny, and you probably have never heard of me.
What if maybe you say something like, I'm the creative force.
That's blowing smoke up my own ass. I can't do that.
I would say you did redefine comedy for a
Redefined comedy. Okay, I started the National Lampoon. I did Animal House. I did Caddyshack, and I... Well, that's the main stuff.
What if you say, I was the man who changed comedy forever, but I couldn't change myself?
Really? Blow me. I was the man who changed comedy forever, but I couldn't change myself.
I like that. That was great.
Oh, fuck.
We can start at whatever point you want to
start. Let's start this film at Harvard, because that's where the fun stuff was.
Okay, that sounds perfect. We're rolling, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. It was the fall of 1964 when I first met Henry Beard. Henry was from the right kind of family on the Upper East Side. He belonged in a place like Harvard. I was a middle-class Midwestern dork. I got in, but it took a while to fit in.
At a soiree.
Doug Kenny, Chagrin Falls.
Jesus Christ, not that one.
My name tag is a picture of Venus.
What's up with the Barry Goldwater fan club?
They're double majoring in white-collar crime and applied hubris.
Doug grabs broccoli.
Fuck those guys.
He chucks it. 4 years later, students in formal wear throw food at each other at a rowdy party. A jester throws a lobster to Doug's racket.
The crowd of Wimbledon guests! He charges in there!
In a samurai helmet, he whacks it through a stained glass window.
Fucking lampoon.
Turns out Henry and I weren't the only troublemakers at Harvard. We found the rest of them at a campus publication that had been around for a century, run out of this strange little castle.
This is the Harvard Lampoon, the only place on campus that a goofy kid from Chagrin Falls can feel like a king. It's a humor magazine, but mostly an excuse to party. It's where I learned that being funny is how I could fit in and meet girls. In fact, I met my wife there. We'll get back to her in a minute. The person who really mattered the most was Henry. The oldest guy who was ever a teenager.
You're shot?
Henry sets down his pipe and takes a pool cue.
Oh, fuck. What most people don't realize is that side spin has no appreciable effect on the tangent line unless the cue ball has sufficient forward roll.
The cue ball bounces off three side rails before tapping a ball into a corner pocket.
Impressive. But can you do this?
Doug launches the cue stick into the dining table.
Exceptional lift.
It's all on the wrist.
Oh, Henry.
He spots a woman. He approaches a trio.
Peter, you look gorgeous. Lucy, you'll fill out someday.
Thanks.
And who is this?
This is Alex. She's a friend of ours. We take psych together.
Doug Kenny, Chagrin Falls, Ohio.
Alex Garcia Mata.
Ooh, a lot of vowels. You know, they are the most sensual of letters.
I did not know that. So this is a super secret castle I've heard so much about.
Would you like to see the dungeon?
How scared should I be? Don't worry.
Reasonably.
Downstairs, she reads a Harvard Lampoon cover with a naked woman.
Does sex sell magazines?
The answer, by the way, is yes.
Is that how we afford the finer things here?
Sprite?
You don't have to try so hard to impress me.
Oh. If I was trying to impress you, I would just do this.
His fist in his mouth.
Oh my God, that is horrible.
I learned that from my mom. It's a true story.
Wow.
You guys should meet.
Yeah, maybe sometime.
Yeah, I would like that.
You're not really a preppy, are you? You're not a hippie either.
No, I'm both. I'm a preppy.
I think what you are is a kid from Chagrin Falls, Ohio, who borrowed his roommate's tuxedo to look like he grew up on the Upper East Side.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Well, that is exactly right. Yeah.
No, you nailed it, in fact.
Well, you wear it well.
Doug kisses her, and Henry slowly opens the door.
I hate to interrupt your mating ritual, but we're about to be adulated upstairs. And I know how you feel about adulation.
Oh, remind me how I feel?
You like it.
Oh, I love adulation. You love it. We should go upstairs then.
They go up a trap door.
We call this the William Randolph Hearst staircase. It's named after John Updike.
Here they are. Super Sir, special guests. As you know, the parodies that Doug and Henry have been churning out have paid for everything you drunks are enjoying here tonight. So it is my honor to unveil their latest, with apologies to J.R.R. Tolkien, hot off the presses, Lord of the Rings.
They wrote a book and all of their term papers and some of mine.
So I'm guessing like a speech would be in order.
That's enough. A little bit more than that, though, because I... Yes, that's enough. Okay. What is it about filling 200 pages with atrocious Lord of the Rings puns that feels so right and yet Sauron? Oh. I'm sorry. Once I start punning about these little guys, it's tough to kick the Hobbit.
That was bad, but we only have our elves to blame. Okay. Always leave them wanting more.
Students throw things at them. Now, sunlight shines in the castle windows as Henry cleans out his pipe on the cover of their book. Doug smokes in a chair with his bow tie undone.
That's what I call a book party.
Things get crazy when the jackets come off. Jackets? Book jackets? Is a kind of joke that was slam at the Legion Hall back home.
Say it again. That's what you call a book
that's
party.
That's what I call a book party.
Yeah, if the book is How to Ruin a Castle.
Oh, God. We had a fine run here, you and I.
You got in? Columbia? Georgetown?
Both. All of them. I guess law school's not that hard to get into.
Yeah, I'm almost done with my applications, too. You need to find a pen. Paper. So I guess the comedy train is rolling to a halt.
I miss this place.
On the phone.
I said I just need to find a pen, Mom.
Doug, this is serious. You didn't apply anywhere?
Oh, for the love of Christ.
But I've been busy. I mean, I did write a book.
Most of a book.
Well, Henry helped with spelling. Did you like it?
She didn't read it.
The book. Yes, it's very nice.
She finds her copy.
Interesting cover.
Loves the cover.
How is Henry?
He's going to law school. That's how Henry is.
Okay. We were supposed to hang out today, but he got arrested. Arson again.
It's the gentleman's crime.
What?
You have to bail him out.
Doug, is that a joke?
Here, give me this. Give me this.
Doug.
Hey, Dad.
What'd you think of the book?
He didn't read it.
It's very nice. Listen.
You got a month to graduation. We're still waiting to hear.
Do you have any kind of plan? You know, I mean, we spent a lot of money to get, what, an English degree? Harvard education,
you... Throw it all away. What's your plan, Doug?
We can't take care of you anymore.
There's a war going on. You want to just wait to get picked in the draft? Or do you want to
graduate Harvard and then move back home, teach tennis with me at the club?
If I teach, do I have to wear shorts?
That's a deal breaker.
What do you want?
You want to write your little joke books your whole life?
Hello, Doug?
I'll just keep doing the lampoon.
What?
What? If you think I'm going to pay for another year of college...
No.
I'm going to start a real magazine. A national one. With Henry.
I'm not doing that.
I don't have all the details, but Henry does have a few questions for you about his backhand.
Come on, he needs help with the topspin.
Yes, Mr. Kenny, hello.
Yeah, hi, Henry.
Well, I usually play on clay, you see.
Yeah, on a hard court.
A baseball game.
Strike one.
You want me to put off law school for some half-assed scheme?
Oh, this game is full-assed. Why settle for real jobs? Don't I just wind up behind a desk somewhere?
You know a magazine needs desks.
The world doesn't need more lawyers or insurance executives or doctors. I mean, yeah, okay, it needs doctors. Thousands. But it also needs us.
Strike two!
Seriously? You assholes are gonna have kids play for you the whole game.
A magazine's a tough business, Doug. You want to be a writer, you should write a novel on the side. Something your parents can show off in their credenza.
I don't need to impress my parents or their credenza.
Strike three!
The kid's got an arm. Nice job, guys.
The library.
I have things I want to do with my life.
No, you have things you think you're supposed to do.
What you want to do is keep on doing the lampoon.
Oh, biomechanics of the human planet.
Thanks, I've been looking everywhere for that.
Yeah. You want me to give up a career in law, to rely on you, and start a humor magazine which will undoubtedly fail?
It won't. Or it might. It might. But this will be big. I can feel it.
How big?
This big.
You're thinking too small. It should be a big magazine size.
See? That's better. I threw something out. You made it better. That's our partnership. You don't want to throw that away. If we're running our own magazine, we can do anything we want. We can publish knock-knock jokes.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Me.
Me who?
Me not doing the magazine.
That can go in issue one.
Let me ask you this. With the Harvard Lampoon, how many deadlines have we missed?
None.
All of them.
All of them?
We've never made a deadline.
You really don't think you can rely on me?
No.
I challenge you. Name 1,000 times I let you down.
Number one.
Okay. It's
outside.
I know it's risky, okay? But why let it end here? Truth is,
I can't do this without you, man. Half the time, I feel like a fraud.
The other half?
Well, the other half, I feel like the second smartest guy in the room.
I'm the smartest?
I promise you, it'll be fun. And the day that it stops being fun, walk away.
Henry twists his lips as he considers, then tilts his head.
Tempting.
Now, the Empire State Building stretches over Manhattan. Traffic flows down a city street as a woman hails a cab. Pedestrians wear Afro hairstyles as others smoke. In suits, Doug and Henry present a portfolio to three different company executives.
I looked at your proposal for Harvard Lampoon.
National Lampoon. We would license the Lampoon name from Harvard.
As we say in their proposal, there is a huge underserved audience for comedy that speaks to our generation.
Oh, and you think that's what this country needs, is a comedy magazine?
Kids need something to read while getting tear-gassed.
Shouldn't Harvard boys like you be working on Wall Street or at some law firm that overcharges me?
What do you want to do with your life?
There's a vast gap between Mad Magazine and The New Yorker.
I'm going to stop you right here.
Okay.
I don't want to waste your time.
I don't want to waste your time.
We don't want to waste your time. We publish Life, Fortune, Sports Illustrated.
Right.
Magazines about what people are interested in.
There's no business here. They'll never sell a magazine. No one will ever go to a newsstand.
I disagree. Our Time parody, right there, sold over 500,000 copies. The Board of the Ring sold even more.
Henry, they don't want to waste our time. Obviously, this Lampoon thing is not going to fly here. So let's talk about our other idea, huh?
Henry gives him a blank look.
Huh? You want to go first, or should I?
You should take it.
Okay. Sandwiches.
I'm sorry?
Modern Sandwich. A monthly magazine devoted to sandwiches and the sandwich lifestyle. Henry's idea. Hey, we are a country divided in so many ways. Politically, economically, geographically. But two slices of bread, some meat, a condiment or two? That's something we can all agree on, right, Jim?
I'm Frank.
Let's all be frank. There is a huge underserved audience for investigative sandwich journalism, huh? I mean, you know, why is it so hard to find a good tomato? Are club sandwiches too exclusive? Modern Sandwich! We'll run short fiction and shorter recipes, show pictures of pickles and things that look like pickles. Because, Jim, other Jim, let's open face it.
Okay, I don't see the point of
this. The point is, you don't have a fucking clue. The kind of people who commute back and forth from Westport, Connecticut. We have nothing to do with you. Pieces of shit.
Doug marches out as Henry sits frozen.
You have our information.
He stands and grabs a free magazine. The executive tries to grab it back.
I'm gonna take it.
Outside, Doug gets a hot dog.
That one I would say was less promising. Maybe we need to rethink our pitch.
Fuck those guys, you know? They're just like my dad. Jerk off the Eisenhower biographies.
Yes, but, and this is what I love about them, they have money. So, can
can we please just pretend for a second that they and we are on the same side until after the check clears?
Fine. Who's next?
Last stop.
Weight Watchers.
We've come to you first because we are so impressed by what you've built with your magazine.
Yogurt instead of sour cream.
So simple, yet so brilliant.
You know, they said a Weight Watchers magazine would never work. Now we're moving 500,000 copies a month. God bless the fatties.
God bless them.
But listen, I don't want to waste your guys' time.
Here we go.
Most magazines fail within the first year. And a laugh rag? Even Hefner couldn't make that work.
Okay, look, Mr. Simmons, Maddie, the truth is, we've already got some offers from the big publishers.
Your friend just said I was...
No,
you're our choice.
To publish a National Lampoon. Yeah.
Yes.
The big publishers, they don't get the youth market. And we checked around. They said, hey, you want funny? You go to Maddie Simmons, because he gets funny.
They said that.
Every single one.
You know, I used to write one-liners for Walter Winchell.
We love Winchell.
Huh?
Yeah.
Doug flicks open his lighter and lights the executive cigar match.
We were in business, with contracts and everything, like real grown-ups. And remember Alex from Harvard? Beautiful, out of my league? Well, we got married and moved in together. I promised to be the two of us against the world.
It's charming.
I mean, it may not be the palatial estate you grew up in.
You know I don't care about that.
There's no jockey's quarters or chocolate-covered chandeliers.
There's still no running water. Toilet's a mess.
Henry sulks into a bedroom.
What is Henry doing here?
He lives here.
We live here.
It's fun, right?
She folds her arms.
Look, I know it's not ideal right now, but hopefully we'll build the business up over time. And in 5 years, Maddie has to buy our share of the magazine. Okay? And then we can each afford our own apartment. And don't worry, Henry and I will wave to you from across the park.
Okay. Fine. Can the two of us at least try to have fun now? Not wait 5 years to be happy?
Of course. First few months will be crazy busy, but I'll pencil you in.
Now, Henry tapes up a handwritten sign. National Lampoon Editorial Offices. In Doug's bare office, Henry sits and kicks his feet up as a woman strides in.
Two pencils and a pad of paper. That's all Maddie said we could afford.
Well, then, please, I insist.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, thank you.
No, thank you.
No, I think I thanked you first.
Well, I think I'm a little more thankful. But thank
okay.
you.
Well,
do something new with your hair today?
Can you blame me? We called her Mary Marshmallow because of her enormous breasts. They were like marshmallows. Hey, what are you up to later?
She flips him off.
What? So he's a charming stud and I'm a dirty old man? That's ageism.
Two hippie types.
Hey, man.
He gives Henry a peace sign as he passes.
Those are the art directors you hired?
They're cool. They know our crumb. So, day one. Let's get started, huh?
Yeah. Ideas for a magazine.
Now, fill up a magazine with words and sentences.
Humorous
preferably
magazine.
Preferably funny.
Doug stares off, tapping his pencil.
I'm going to write down comedy.
That's good. Let's build on that.
I bet Chris and George have a few ideas.
Maybe we should find some writers who didn't go to Harvard.
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand. You mean like a Yaley?
Oh, they were out there. One of the first guys we brought on board wrote dirty comic strips for underground papers and aspired to be the Antichrist.
I am going to send you a canister of nerve gas that will explode upon opening, you mongoloid twat. You sent me the wrong records. You're the Columbia fucking record club!
In sunglasses with greased hair, Michael O'Donohue hurls his phone. At a theater...
We had a comedian from England named Tony Hendra.
Mr. Sullivan would find jokes about the
Don't say
offensive.
It. Don't you say it.
Offensive?
Do you know what I find offensive? Being a traitor to one's generation. You know what? I am done sucking chuckles from blue-haired septuagenarians. Tell Mr. Sullivan he can take his bloody show and shove it.
On the sidewalk.
Then there was a woman who managed to crash our little boys' club. A refugee from the advertising world. Ann Beats.
Hey, baby. Why don't you bring those jugs back around?
She stops on a corner.
She was tough. She had to be to deal with all our caveman bullshit.
Look at you. Where'd you get those pecs, Butch? Come on.
Little juicy buns, eh? Mm. Come on, spin around. Let me see that ass. Show mom that ass.
What? No.
I'm sorry. I was just trying to prove a point. I'm sure there's no hard feelings. Let me give you a quick hand job.
He smiles.
Really?
She laughs and struts away as her name appears. At a cafe.
Excuse me? Story idea. Amish in space? Secret letters of the alphabet.
I'll get the check.
Brian McConaughey, straight up weirdo. Brian made more sense once you understood that he came to us from the planet Mogdar. We also had Sean Kelly, Rick Meyerowitz, so many great contributors. But four is all that really fit our story, so I'm sorry, guys.
They walk away.
You know, maybe if one of you had been black, we could have included you.
So there were no funny black writers in the 70s?
And just one funny woman.
Oh, I'm sure they were out there. It's just that we didn't think to look. You know, it was a different time. In our defense, we also had very few Jews.
At the editorial office.
Okay, everyone, take a seat, take a seat. Gather around. Welcome, everyone, to the National Lampoon.
I'm still working on that.
Mm-hmm. We have 8 weeks to put out the first issue, and so far we have nothing. So please remember that there are no bad ideas, apart from ideas we don't like.
Yeah, do not pitch those.
Yep. I had a few thoughts. Mm-hmm.
Michael sifts through index cards.
Were we all supposed to bring those?
Yes, I left mine on the box.
Hitler's device for gassing Rube Goldberg.
A Dr. Seuss story concerning the sexual awakening of a young toucan.
A concrete jungle book. A young white baby comes of age above 125th Street.
That's tempting.
One of those baby books, but for a war baby in Vietnam. Baby's first womb, that kind of thing. It'll be adorable.
How about this? The joys of wife tasting.
This wife has a fruity flavor, exceptional finish.
This wife had a vinegary bouquet.
Tarzan of the cows.
Nancy Reagan's dating do's and don'ts.
You're a good man, Charlie Manson.
Tempting. Upon seeing his condition, Miss Braddock said, Winston, you're drunk. Mm-hmm. Mustering all his dignity, Churchill cocked an eyebrow and rejoined with that famous Churchill wit, shove it up your ass, you ugly cunt.
Yeah, really great, guys.
Daddy, where are you going?
Here's a cover idea. Uh-huh. Nixon with a long wooden nose.
Michael turns his chair to Tony.
You know, like Pinocchio.
Someone throws a ball at him.
It's really hard hitting.
Oh. Tony stands to leave.
You know, I hear the village voice has very good benefits.
Yeah, we talked about bad ideas. We had a whole conversation.
Yeah, well, so much for the free exchange of ideas.
Wait. What if Nixon is just like the emperor? But he's got no clothes, so.
What was his name? I've literally already forgotten who that was.
Hey. Mm-hmm. Despite Tony's horrible idea, I think this magazine is going to hit it out of the park.
Sexy cover issue.
Total failure. We're selling less than half our print run. And what is with the goddamn duck?
I never did get the duck.
The duck is our mascot.
You know what the cigarette companies are telling me? I'm not putting my ad in this underground piece of shit. It's ugly.
It makes me physically ill to say this, but I agree with Maddie.
Thank you, Henry.
Henry shrugs at Doug as Maddie strides out.
Okay, who cares if it's ugly? You know, comedy doesn't have to be pretty. It should be raw. Fucking rock and roll.
Doug, we have to fire the art directors.
What? But they hang out with David Bowie. I know that might not impress an heir to Canadian woolen mills.
Hurtful.
But their stuff is funny.
No. It looks funny. Doug, there's a difference. Maddie and I had a meeting with the art director for Family Health.
Oh, Family Health. Oh, that's a funny magazine. Are you kidding me?
Look.
He sets out a binder.
Okay, what am I looking at?
He redesigned our old material. Straight, deadpan. So the art isn't fighting the joke. This is what your friends down the hall did, and this is the new guy.
Huh. See what you're saying. It's pretty good.
It's better.
Realistic, like Norman Rockwell instead of cartoons.
And the duck?
No duck.
Doug blinks, then puffs Henry's empty pipe.
Tempting. That he finally saw the light.
I can be very persuasive.
Look, if I fire those guys, they're gonna make me do so much acid with them.
Then I'll fire them.
No, I'll do it. Hey, guys, some bad news.
A kiddie pool.
birthday.
Ladies, let's lift those drinks.
Brian puts a doll face down and snaps a photo.
Perfect.
The cover says, negligent mother, as the ladies drink.
The arm should be like slightly bent.
Doug leans over an illustrator. His cover shows Boy Scouts touching each other around a fire. Boys' real life, for most boys. Michael types the Vietnamese baby book. Pages show baby's first wound, a four-fingered handprint, and first funeral. Now,
here!
We are being sued by Disney for $8 million.
Well, Maddie, maybe it wasn't such a hot idea to have Minnie Mouse flashing her tits.
This was not my idea.
I distinctly remember you saying, boys, it'll be fine. She has pasties on. This is completely my idea.
It does sound like Maddie. You having fun yet?
One could say fun is being had.
Okay, Michael, let's do this.
Doug bends over on his desk.
This is for the magazine, right?
An article about proctologists features his butthole.
Volkswagen is suing us for $30 million over your ad.
My ad! I can't tell you how great it feels to be valued like this.
It shows a VW floating on water with text. If Ted Kennedy drove a Volkswagen, he'd be president today. More, Nancy Reagan's Guide to Dating.
The Mormons are protesting. The feminists hate us. The Catholics, what do we do to the Catholics? Liza Minnelli? The American Nazi Party.
Oh, wait, this is fan mail.
Such a good boy.
He looks too happy.
I know that look. That dog is in paradise.
Mary, I'm going to have to ask you to step out of the shot.
You're not going to hurt him, right?
No, why would I hurt him?
What are you doing?
Don't worry, I don't think there's any bullets in there.
Should what? I fire?
Mary,
no.
Step back, I don't want to hit my patches.
A cover shows a pistol aimed at the dog. If you don't buy this magazine, we'll kill this dog. Hands grab copy after copy off the stands. A student in a top bunk hands a copy down to the guy below. More guys gather around another issue and buy from a stand. A chart shows sales numbers rising. Maddie shakes hands.
Kent cigarettes. Panasonic speakers.
I sell 30 books.
Oh, okay. Have a seat.
Different issues flash in split frames. A kid on his bed flips through the pages to a dirty cartoon. In the panels, Doug sits naked on a couch with an attractive naked woman. In one, she says, this photo funnies is X-rated, right? Pointing to the top of the page, he says, that's what it says up there. The kid scurries into the bathroom, unzipping his fly. At home, alone in bed, Alex shuts the same issue and sets it on the bedside table before turning out the light. Old Doug appears next to her.
I know. I wasn't around. Sometimes, to create something special, you need to stay in the office as long as it takes to get the work done.
Henry shuffles through the dark bullpen and finds Doug typing in his office.
Hey. Yeah. I have a confession to make. When we started, I never thought it would be much more than the two of us writing jokes. Now it's turning all this. But as long as the center of it, it's you and me working together.
He blinks and gives a sincere nod. He turns toward the door, then back to Doug.
McSorley's is still open. You want to grab a drink and watch sailors hit on runaway teens?
Doug stays frozen with his back to Henry.
Doug?
Henry walks around his desk.
Doug.
Doug is asleep, sitting up. A cigarette still burning between his lips. Henry gently plucks it out and drops it into a can. He gets a pencil from his suit pocket and leans over Doug to edit what he was working on.
This one's funny.
He walks out of the dark office. On TV, Doug smokes with a talk show host.
Is there such a thing as over the line to you? A lot of people think your material goes too far.
A lot of people voted for Nixon.
And I suppose those people aren't your people.
The screen. Doug Kenny, the National Lampoon.
Is that a marijuana cigarette?
Doug casually puts it out in the ashtray.
No. Let's talk about this. The sexual frustration issue. Now, there's a picture in here that we can't even show of a naked black woman.
You mean this?
He holds up surprise poster number 3.
We'll have to cut that out.
Oh, because of the size of her bush?
Mr. Kinney, it's a fine line between being clever and offensive, isn't it?
Look, if I could just say something in defense of National Lampoon for one moment.
Please.
We come from a tradition of truth tellers. A long time ago, there was someone else society found offensive. They thought that what he did was radical, dangerous. They persecuted him and eventually killed him. Of course, I'm referring to Dracula.
The host narrows his eyes, then looks blankly at the camera.
This is Doug Kenny, folks, of National Lampoon. That's a humor magazine. Doing very well. Maybe we can do something about that.
You play tennis?
Fuck you.
Doug shuffles into the apartment. Henry glances up from working at the table.
Wow. Rough evening.
Tony and I swapped vices for the night. He smoked a joint and I drank a bottle of port.
What was the result of this highly scientific experiment?
Oh, we attacked a subway cop with a sword.
Where did we get a sword?
He has a deadline tomorrow.
The cop? No, don't worry, I'll fill his pages.
That's funny. You're already filling 6 pages.
So, I can do 10. No?
O'Donoghue has this great idea. He thinks that we should do our own radio show. Like this 1930s old-timey operation, you know, with sketches and song parodies. What do you think?
Tempting.
Tempting good or tempting to hate everything about it?
We're barely able to put out a magazine.
Then let's barely be able to do something else.
No, Doug, radio. We're literary people.
It'll be fine. Don't I always come through?
No.
Well, someday I will.
I'm worried about your little Dougie.
Oh.
I'm worried.
Oh, hey, sweetie. What are you still doing up? You grading papers?
You're taking on something else.
Would you rather I just stop then? Not be successful?
You are successful, Doug.
Alex.
Good night.
Okay, just for the record, you're the one who's walking away.
He slouches as she shuts the bedroom door.
You made Mary Marshmallow a managing editor?
Mary's been with us since day one.
She is a secretary who happens to have enormous breasts.
That's just sexist.
You wrote a piece called Marshmallows about people having sex with marshmallows.
Coincidence.
You're fucking her.
That's coincidence, too. I'll figure it out. I'm gonna tell Alex.
No, don't. That's not my business. The Lampoon is my business. And you're my friend. So, if you're gonna take on all this extra stuff, just remember there's only one of you.
The radio show will be O'Donoghue's thing. I won't be involved.
1973.
You know, we have a lot of fun, but Ed Sullivan is one of our great entertainers. And I had a thought in the cab on the way to the studio tonight, and that was this. What if Ed Sullivan were tortured? And when I say tortured, I mean, what if steel needles, say 6 inches long, were plunged into his eyeballs? I think it would go something like this.
Groups of teenagers listen and laugh. Doug.
This National Lampoon Radio Hour contains sexually explicit material and other adult content that children should not be exposed to.
We probably should have warned you of that at the top of the show.
Okay, so I was involved. We built our own studio on Madison Avenue and hired some talented performers who would work for bus fare.
Flexi the Pocket Monkey?
Gilda Radner.
No, you may not have Flexi the Pocket Monkey.
Bill Murray.
All I got sandwich on with all mayo, with red lettuce and rye, and little bacon and egg. Like a dream of a lot of ketchup and mustard.
Christopher Guest.
Guys, I think Coach is talking about the big man.
John Belushi.
The league commissioner.
No, what I mean is, you got leukoplakia.
Harold Ramis.
Start off with cute jokes and you end up with atheistic trash, like this December issue of the National Lampoon.
Chevy Chase.
Yeah, so these actors don't look exactly like the real people, but come on. You think I look like Will Forte when I was 27? You think Will Forte is 27?
A list.
Here's some other things we changed from real life for pacing, dramatic impact, or just because we felt like it.
A group in the studio.
Hey, here I'm coming in right here. I am a woman.
Gilda, so do that again. Start the band up, make them go, and then all you guys stop her immediately.
Okay. I am a woman.
Between the magazine and the radio show, I barely had time for my other hobbies, like being a terrible husband.
At the office.
Doug Kenny is the handsomest man in comedy.
Their words, not mine.
Actually, it's a direct quote from you.
I'm sure they fact-checked it.
The staff considers Henry to be the dad of the magazine, while Doug is like the mom who keeps hitting the cooking Sherry.
Oh, Sherry does more than cook. I would never hit her.
Do you only talk in one-liners?
I also know some dirty limericks.
He hands her a drink and kisses her.
I thought you were with Mary.
I'm with a lot of people.
They stumble backwards to the couch as they make out, then freeze into a photo. It becomes the first panel of a cartoon. Wrapped in a blanket, the woman says, "Well, that was quick." Doug says, "Was it weird that I shouted my own name?" As she asks, "Is that what you were?" Another voice says, "Doug?" Alex enters the frame to find them nude. Doug says, "Alex," as the woman says, "Uh-oh." The next panel shows the woman gone and Alex crossing her arms. In the next one, the couple turns their backs to each other, not speaking. Then Doug looks at Alex, but she doesn't look back. He says, "I don't think I ever wanted to be married." She says, "Goodbye, Doug," leaving him alone on the couch.
Goodbye, Doug.
At night in the office, Alex closes Doug's door, then pauses outside Henry's office. They lock eyes, Alex with a cold expression. Then she walks away. Henry lets out a sigh and shakes his head. Daytime, editors work at their desks. In his office, Doug rubs his baggy eyes before putting his glasses back on and getting to work.
Hey, Doug.
Chevy Chase enters.
Left a sketch to punch up, but don't worry about it. I know you have a lot on your mind right now.
Thank you, but it's okay. It's okay.
Chevy takes a seat on the couch, studying Doug with concern.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I mean, with Alex. If you want to talk about it, I am a licensed chiropractor in Honduras, parts of Honduras.
I appreciate that, yeah.
Doug, if you want my advice...
Hold that thought. Done. Here's your sketch. I was stuck on that last line.
You were punching on my sketch while I was attempting to be earnest?
I know I fucked up. I'm fucked up, all right? But there's just too much work to be done, huh? I mean, we have a nation to amuse.
We're at war, son. And it's our duty to serve.
So if you can afford it, you can.
Now let me tell you what it's like to run a successful comedy empire. The more ads you sell in the magazine, the more pages you print. Someone has to write those pages. Then there's the other pieces to edit. Art to commission. Headlines, captions, and cartoons to fix. All on a deadline. On top of that, you expand into books, albums. Then, oh, the radio show based on your successful magazine is also successful. And holy shit, an hour's a lot of time to fill. Couldn't we have just called it the National Lampoon Radio Half Hour?
Cut that gag about Nixon's daughter. RCA is going to drop the album.
Then you start a live show. And that's a hit, too. Yes, I know success is a great thing that we all want, but I'm trying to explain why maybe you can't handle it. To deal with the stress, you smoke dope, but that makes it harder to meet the deadlines, and someone else has to pick up the slack.
An IOU.
How much time did you spend on this coupon?
Well, shit, maybe a little LSD for inspiration would help, but now it's 5 hours later, and you're still tripping, and that thing you wrote makes no sense, even to you. You feel bad about letting your partner down. Not that one.
Alex.
No, well, that one, too.
Henry.
Are you listening to me?
You probably shouldn't stay out so late, but you want to prove that you can run with Chevy and Belushi. Tony slept with O'Donohue's girl, and now O'Donohue won't work with him. And says you're all sexist, which is true, but that's not the point. And oh, right, the magazine circulation is how high now?
Doug.
You'll just be over here in your office.
He locks himself in his office and cowers.
Doug.
A photo captures him in the fetal position in the corner, and a dialogue bubble with ellipses pops up. Morning at the apartment. Henry shuffles to the coffee maker and turns it on. He hits the button again, then presses it harder and jiggles the machine.
Doug? Doug, did you break the machine again? Doug!
He spots a note curled under the telephone cradle. He opens it up to read, "Dear Henry, I'm going gonzo. If I don't get out of here, the eye in the sky is going to get me." Henry turns the note over. This is not a bit. Sailboats fill a marina, Martha's Vineyard. Doug's college friends sit on the porch of a beach house. The couple shares a confused look, then answer the door to a tired-looking Doug.
Doug?
Peter, Lucy, is this where the college reunion is?
Hey, man. Good to see you.
She reads to him.
To produce a mighty book, you must choose a mighty theme. No great and enduring volume can ever be written on the flea, though many there be who have tried it. Ere entering upon the subject of fossil whales.
As a boy, Doug rides in the back of his parents' car. His window reflects the sign of Chagrin Falls Memorial Park, then kids on bikes. The cemetery fades into view as the car stops at the curb. Two men open the car doors, and Doug's parents climb out as he stays put.
For all I care.
Doug stays in the car. At a gravesite, old Doug stands by a photo showing a smiling teen with a tennis racket. Daniel Kenny.
My brother. Dad's favorite. Kidney failure. The golden boy who died too soon. You see why I didn't want to start the movie with this stuff? It's a total bummer. You know, the nice thing about dying young, you stay perfectly frozen in time. You never have to grow up.
Entering upon the subject of fossil whales, I present my credentials as a geologist.
Lucy?
Yeah?
I did the right thing, right? I had to leave.
I know.
Right? I didn't know how to do it anymore.
How do you think they're doing without you?
They're big boys. They can handle themselves.
Michael, you're being unreasonable.
Somebody really didn't like the Vietnamese baby book.
Is it wrong that I'm jealous?
I always knew I'd die from dynamite being sent to an office, but not like this.
Guys, we have to evacuate. Come on, everybody. Move.
Michael,
come on. I think Tom Jones only gets panties.
Please stop smoking. That's not safe.
If you put it down, I'll let you take me to dinner at the Rainbow Room.
I'm listening.
Hi, is this the city desk? I have a story for you.
Don't be a bunch of sissies. If the nitroglycerin hasn't leaked out, it's harmless.
I could eat it. But it has leaked out. That's what I'm telling you, is that the nitroglycerin, it's leaked out.
Shit.
He sets it down, and the police haul him out.
Hey, no! That is my dynamite! It was addressed to me! You can't have my dynamite! You bastard!
That's LAMPOON.
Mike! Yes. Coming back!
Mike! Give me! Rape! I'm warning you that I'm going to rape you!
Ow!
Peter and Lucy.
I don't want to kick him out, but he's been here for weeks.
He needs us right now. Well, maybe we should take him to the carousel again.
Hey.
They find him writing.
What's this?
Oh, this is Teenage Commies from Outer Space, the great American novel. Finally started writing it.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you. It's 1956, and aliens attack. It's like Salinger meets Mark Twain on acid.
Wow.
Yeah, they're sharing a drink with Bukowski while going down on Jane Austen. Stay with the metaphor for a second. Oh, no, here comes James Joyce. He's got some baby oil.
The couple shares a look.
As you go through.
6 months later, Anne and Michael enter the editorial office.
That's the whole point.
Where's my stuff?
I know what a dictionary is.
Henry, where's my stuff?
I don't know where your stuff is.
Henry.
Okay, cut the bullshit. I want an answer. Whose stuff is on my desk?
I don't know whose
stuff. We were gone for 2 days and you gave her desk away?
Doug's gone for months, but you don't touch his desk.
Yeah,
it's not enough that you won't put my stuff in the magazine. Now you just really want to send a message, right?
I don't put your stuff in the magazine.
Clearly, you hate women.
Look, it was probably the cleaners.
Henry. Then fire those bitches, okay? Because here's the option. Either they go,
Henry,
or we go.
No, Henry. Henry.
This water fountain hasn't been operational in 15 days.
That's what you've been saying, Henry, for.
Very thirsty.
Look, you're not quitting. We'll talk to Maddie. He'll smooth it over.
I would rather butt-fuck cancer than shake hands with Maddie Simmons.
It's called...
This is half what you owe me, you cheap fuck, between the ticket sales and the albums.
It's National Lampoon's Lemmings, not Tony Hendra's Lemmings. What are you doing?
He dials Maddie's phone.
Yeah, I'd like to report a robbery, please.
Okay, come on.
A man called Matty Simmons, whom I have apprehended at 635 Madison, has stolen money from me.
And another thing, if I choose to bring a grenade to work, that is my right as an Irish American!
Tony tackles Matty through the door.
You people, you're dangerous.
Okay, let's go.
You all right?
Michael and Anne run into Doug as they march out.
Holy shit.
Everyone in the office stares at him.
I left a
half-empty grape Fanta here. Has anyone seen it? No?
About yay big?
He holds his fingers 5 inches apart. Later, Henry stares across the desk at Doug, who reads a newspaper.
Should I be for the Black Panthers or against?
Henry's chest deflates in a sigh.
So, what's going on?
What's going on? Well, O'Donohue quit again. He and Anne are now dating, so she quit too. Tony stole a sketch from Monty Python and used it in Lemmings, which is fantastic. And Maddie is claiming he can't afford to buy us out next year in flagrant violation of our contract.
Oh, gosh. I meant, what's going on with you?
That is what's going on with me. This is what you left me with.
Well, wasn't a completely wasted breakdown. I finished the novel.
He pulls the manuscript from his bag and hands it across the desk to Henry. Henry looks down at it, then up at Doug, who crosses his arms expectantly.
You want me to read this now?
Would you?
He gives a pleading wince. Henry shakes his head, then reads. He turns over the title page as he sets it down, then settles into his chair. Later, he puts his pipe in his mouth and twiddles his thumbs as he reads. He finishes with his feet up on the desk, replacing the last page onto the stack. Doug turns eagerly from the window.
It's...
They meet eyes, and Doug grabs the manuscript.
It sucks. Yeah.
He dumps it in the trash.
It's done. It's not worth talking about.
He shuffles out of the office.
It's good to have you back, Doug.
Henry heads up a writer's meeting.
February can be the strange section.
Yes, the strange section. And we should do an issue within the issue, the National Lampoon.
So, instead of our bodies ourselves, our bodies, none of your business.
Magazine, Play Dead, erotic photos of women's corpses hanging from nooses, head in the oven. Maybe one of them fell down the stairs.
Yes.
I think if we could write up Nixon's resume, you know, now that he's back on the job market.
Yes, like the piece PJ has in the current issue, which is available on newsstands. If you want to buy a copy, you could use it as research.
Okay, Tony, we had something like that in the last issue. It was not important. We can do, I think Play Dead is the way to go.
And we'll let Brian here get all the dead bodies together.
Doug wanders the room.
Hey, where's my tennis racket? My tennis racket. I used to keep my tennis racket behind the filing cabinet.
Hey, Doug.
Glory hole. What's that? Through a glory hole page and have an illustration of a lavatory cubicle.
Henry gestures him out of the room.
About the tennis racket?
No. Listen, I was thinking maybe you could do another special project. You know?
Yeah.
Away from normal deadlines. You know, get out of the office. You could do it with PJ. What do you think?
Doug gives a sullen nod as Henry steps back into the room.
What about a map to glory holes in your neighborhood
that
just says your house?
What did I miss?
These people don't need encouragement.
They'll be removed.
A cartoon, a Jewish moon landing.
Henry watches Doug shuffle away.
I'm not sure if Henry was trying to save me from embarrassment or if he truly believed I could still create the great American, I don't know, something. But either way, we found it. An idea full of paranoia and nostalgia. The meaningless cruelty of being young in America. The high school yearbook.
They're all the same. It's like every single shop teacher went to the same barber.
It's authoritarian government, man. It's like we're living in an oppressed nation.
Yes.
Salute to the seniors. Yes, this is exactly what they make you salute these people. They all have 1,000-yard stares.
As he and PJ go through yearbooks, the cheerleaders come to life as the ones he saw from the car as a kid.
I wonder why Nixon is the way he is. It's because he went to high school, man.
Chess club, glee club, future homemakers. Everything screwed up about our culture, it all begins right here. All these forced smiles. You know, whether we know it or not, every high school sorts us into the same exact types. It's Nazi social engineering. Bully, introvert, teacher's pet, delinquent, foreign exchange student, virgin, perfect perky princess, spazzy McSpaz, wacky class clown.
They stage photo shoots at a school.
There's a type for everyone, whether you're the rich dick, future homosexual, beatnik, tramp, overlooked black kid, the dictator, the nobody, and of course, the kid who died. This was the best senior year ever, except for the tragic deaths of Howard Havermeyer and President Kennedy and the car accident after prom. All right, ready, girls? 3, 2, 1.
Cheerleaders spin their skirts and become the cover.
The Lampoon's hit parody of the high school yearbook, now on track to sell over 1 million copies, is the greatest example of group writing since the King James Bible.
And you didn't write a word of it.
I'm in the group. We all work together. I mean, I gave everyone credit for Lemmings.
Maddie?
Those two look armed for battle.
Well, it's been 5 years. Matty has to buy them out. Time to feast on the fatted calf.
Henry and Doug storm into Maddie's office.
Maddie, we need to talk about this now.
I know why you're here. I know what day it is. Let me explain this. You boys are victims of your own success. I don't have the cash to pay you 10 times earnings. We got too much earnings. I can't cover it.
My apologies for making the yearbook such a hit. I'll aim lower next time.
You signed a contract.
He didn't fulfill his contract, did he? He disappeared on us.
I still put out the fucking magazine. Every month.
We just want to be paid what we deserve.
I know. Here's what I can do now, okay? More stock. A lot more stock. And I pay the entire sum off in 10 years, okay? I mean, doesn't that sound better than fucking Maddie over a barrel?
Doug watches Henry's face fall.
I knew it.
I had to get Henry what he deserved. And the only way to change Maddie's mind was a well-thought-out argument delivered clearly and calmly.
He clears the desk, then climbs on it.
We want our money! I fucked up, fine, but Henry kept it going. We want our money. Now!
Henry gently taps an award off the wall.
Come on, let's go! Do it!
The staff watches them wreak havoc.
We want our money!
I think it's going well.
Hey, I'm going for the checks!
He opens his desk drawer.
You two are pirates.
Here's a pen.
Maddie glares, then writes 2 checks for $3 million each.
You assholes. You know what you've done. You've ruined me. You've ruined this company. You know that.
We made this company.
Now, Doug smiles down at his check as he trails a serious Henry into his office.
We should celebrate, huh?
Come on, let's go buy you a new pipe.
Henry? Tempting?
They're all expecting a slice of the pie.
Doug looks toward the contributors.
Could get rather awkward.
I don't get it. What's the bit?
Henry packs up his office.
You might need those. I'm digging the commitment.
You said if it ever stopped being fun. So?
We just got the money. I mean, I just got us the money.
No, you got Maddie to write us a check, Doug. I earned that money. I'm done.
Okay, look, we can hire more editors. We'll focus on the writing, you know? Just you
back.
And me, like it used to be.
I want to move on.
What's that supposed to mean? You want to move on from us?
It means I'm tired of taking care of you.
He hangs his head as Doug's shoulders sag.
What are you going to do all day? Huh?
Come on.
He shuts his briefcase.
You can't leave.
You did.
He shoots Doug a wounded look. Doug nods and looks down.
You'll be fine.
Don't forget to feed and water them.
Henry.
To the office.
Good luck. Fuck you. Goodbye.
The staff watches with stunned expressions as he strides out of the office. Doug stands blinking in the doorway as Tony shifts on his feet.
Who gets his office?
At night, Doug works in his office reading a document by lamplight.
BJ, this Esquire parody's a mess.
I gotta run into a meeting. Can you do a quick rewrite?
As he reluctantly gets to work, stage lights turn up and actors appear behind him wearing headphones and reading from scripts.
Does this sound familiar?
I feel terrible.
Oh, honey, just a few days ago, you were feeling swell.
Gee, Dad, kind of like what happened to Doug Kinney.
Exactly, son. I feel just like that piece of garbage Doug Kinney.
Feeling like Doug Kinney. A chronic condition with no known cure. Symptoms include loneliness, uselessness,
and a crushing sense of regret.
I heard Maddie Simmons, you know, the publisher.
Sure, I know Maddie. Great guy.
Well, he put PJ O'Rourke in charge of the magazine because Doug couldn't handle something like that.
It could happen to you or someone in your church or Masonic lodge, feeling like Doug Kenny. Seek treatment before you become permanently, irreversibly, unlovable.
The actors disappear as Doug fades. Now, he sits alone in an emptying bar. He notices a woman and her friend.
It's hereditary. I mean, have you ever heard of anybody like this?
No. Right behind you.
Excuse me. Did you play Abigail Adams on PBS?
Oh, I didn't play Abigail Adams. I became Abigail Adams. I didn't think there were any PBS viewers here.
Oh, no, I don't watch. Somebody had just described it in great detail. You seem like generally what they were describing.
Mm-hmm.
Like an Abigail Adams type.
Catherine, I'm the woman you're hitting on.
Doug Kenny, Chagrin Falls, Ohio. I'm the woman who's hitting on you. Hey, what do you say we get out of here, get something to eat, huh?
3 a.m.?
Yeah, you're right. We should probably just eat here, huh?
He bites a wine glass.
Oh, fuck.
What's wrong? Glass on my teeth?
Outside.
Yeah, I kind of conquered the publishing thing. I'm probably going to release an album of Gregorian chants next. I think I'm going to make an epic movie, kind of Gone with the Wind meets Citizen Kane, but better and longer.
You're going Hollywood.
Oh, I'm so Hollywood, you don't even know. I changed my name to Charlton Hepburn.
They stop by a guitar player on a stoop, and Doug sings.
Beautiful dreamer, wake unto me.
He spins her, then pulls her in for a long kiss. She pulls away, holding his face in her hands.
I don't usually kiss on the first date.
Well, I don't consider this a date.
Then let's go back to my place and screw.
She grins as she walks away, and he hurries to catch up.
So Catherine came into my life just when I needed her. But nobody can just swoop in and fix you right away. I was still struggling with the same anxieties. But now, with millions of dollars that frankly, I had no idea what I was going to do.
August 1975, Doug drives a yellow convertible with Chevy Chase riding shotgun. They pull up to a sprawling mansion, and his parents come outside.
You buy your parents this? Way to establish dominance.
Surprise!
What are you doing here? Is that a Porsche?
Gorgeous. Just gorgeous.
You know, she was the first member of her tribe to wear shoes.
What is that?
Well, Dad complained about the lawn, told me it was too much to mow. So, let's get out of here, lawnmowers.
He unloads two goats.
Oh, really fun, Doug. Now the mower will be shitting on my lawn.
Yeah, it's called fertilizer, Dad. They threw that in for free.
Inside.
So, you work with Doug doing the comedy?
Oh, never feels like work with Doug. But now I'm about to star in a new TV show.
How wonderful. We'll have to watch, won't we?
You must be so proud of him, all his success at such a young age, all the while being colorblind.
You call this success? Publishing a dirty magazine, making fun of the president?
Okay, Harry.
What is there to be proud of?
Doug overhears as he steps inside. His dad scowls and his mother lets out a sigh. Chevy points to the home bar.
Get a gimlet.
He stumbles into it.
Dear.
Sorry, I got it. Right.
He knocks over glasses.
Oh, I got it.
Doug chuckles as he fakes cleaning it up and falls over.
Okay, I see what I did.
Good evening.
Good evening.
In bed, Doug and Catherine watch Michael on TV.
Good evening.
They put O'Donohue on live TV. Evening.
O'Donohue, Belushi, they got Gilda and Chevy. Right. Fuckers probably hired our accountants too.
I would like
To feed your fingertips.
To feed your fingertips.
To the Wolverines.
To the Wolverines.
Next. I'm afraid.
Come on. It's funny.
You know, NBC asked Maddie to do a Lampoon TV show.
Really? That's great. Are you going to work on it?
They asked him 8 months ago. And he said that we were too busy.
Babe, who cares? This is on in the middle of the night.
I care. Right? This should have been ours. It basically is ours.
You could just be flattered. Because it shows how influential you are.
As she kisses him, Michael acts out a heart attack.
You want to be okay about this?
No. Tell me again how influential I am.
You are the most influentialist.
She reaches her hand under the covers. He watches the TV as they kiss.
Live from New York, it's Saturday night!
Now, Doug frowns as he walks into a rowdy party at a smoky bar.
Turns out Saturday Night Live was canceled after only 3 weeks. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to say it was an instant sensation that is still going 4 decades later. So I went to one of their parties to congratulate my friends on the success they were having without me.
Oh, Doug! Yeah. Hey!
Hi.
How are you doing?
Hey!
Anne and Michael.
Enjoying your little show along with the rest of the country?
Yeah, it's fun. It's like the Lampoon used to be. Is. Like, don't listen to me.
Television, the napalm of culture. Burns you down to nothing, but the glow is awful pretty.
Okay, so he's just upset because Lauren wants us to write sketches for the Muppets.
I don't write for felt.
Oh, not you too, Brian.
They offered me 30 pieces of silver. You know how I feel about silver.
They were like ships leaving a sinking raft.
Doug!
Chevy trips and falls.
And yeah, Chevy did this every time I saw him.
Right. There we go.
Hi, Doug.
You love her.
You should be Lauren.
Oh, the comedy boy wonder, huh?
No, hey, there could be two boy wonders. Boys wonder. What do boys wonder? Excuse you, Lauren. It's Doug Kenny from the National Lampoon.
Hi, Doug. Pleasure to meet you.
Thanks. Like the show? It's great stuff.
Right. Well, you know, we do what we can. Doug, you get the kind of comedy we're doing here. You and I, you know, we share a sensibility.
And a cast and writers, yeah?
Spotting talent is the most important job I have. You can understand that.
Yeah.
I was wondering, would you be interested in joining us?
You want me to write for you? Okay, oh, that sounds great. Yeah, I'd get to be your employee.
That's a fairly narrow way to put that, Doug.
You think I'm flamed out.
I don't know. It's not what I'm saying at all.
Well, it sounds like it is.
What I'm saying is I think you could make this show even better than it is.
Okay, well, I don't need a handout.
He hands over his beer.
Oh, here. Probably going to steal it from me anyway.
He leaves as Brian steps up.
Game show sketch. Name those bats. Contestants are in a barn. Bats flying at them. They have to name the bats. The game show.
I wasn't going to let some TV show steal my thunder. I had to set my sights higher. So Harold and I came up with the perfect idea for the first National Lampoon movie.
Laser Orgy Girls.
With Maddie.
Huh? It's about Charles Manson in the 10th grade. Huh?
The man's visited by aliens or UFO, whatever you want to
Guys,
say.
Guys, Manson in high school.
You're right. We'll put him in college. It is actually funny.
No, forget Manson. It's a bad idea.
So what are you saying, Maddie? You don't want a movie about Charles Manson?
I'm saying we got one shot for a movie. Manson in high school is a parody ad for the magazine.
Right. If it's a rights
issue.
We
need a big idea.
My uncle's a
lawyer.
Big
movie idea.
We can find a way to get Manson involved.
Harold, I think Maddie might actually have a point here.
What's the bit we're doing?
No, this isn't a bit. Look, what's the most popular thing in the magazine?
The tits.
Huh? Yes, the tits, but also, like, you know, Night of the Seven Fires, Pino's First Lay, all the Chris Miller stuff.
The fraternity stories.
Yeah. Look, we have a chance to make the great American college movie here. Plus tits. Maddie, get Chris Miller online.
Okay. I like it. God damn it. I'm not your secretary.
At a cafe.
We got together with Chris Miller and we wrote down every funny college story, every crazy character we could think of. Then we hooked up with Ivan Reitman, a Canadian filmmaker who produced a stage show for us.
Delta was by far the craziest frat at Dartmouth. They used to call it the Animal House.
That's a good title.
Yeah. The craziest frat.
Maddie.
Brad Zotti from Universal is on.
Brad. Yeah.
Got you on
speakerphone here with Ivan.
Look, guys.
Hey, Brad.
Movie treatments are 20 pages long.
This is 114.
Well, this is their first movie, Brad.
I would never make this.
I'm surprised to hear you say that. I mean, you know the Lampoon brand is hot right now. A very strong demographic with the young people.
Okay, look.
I couldn't do this unless it was, like, for under $2 million.
We can do that.
Really?
I guarantee it.
Okay.
We got a deal.
Great.
Thank you, Brad.
Bye.
You are not going to regret that. Oh, he hung up.
So with the studio's ringing endorsement, we started shooting in the fall of 1976, St. Louis, Missouri.
1977, Eugene, Oregon.
Close enough.
It was a classic tale of slobs versus snobs, the Deltas versus the Omegas. We hired an ensemble of mostly unknown actors. There's Tim Matheson in the orange sweater. He's about to say the title of this movie.
Futile and stupid gesture.
But we also needed a heavy hitter, a comic superstar that we knew could deliver the goods. And that's why we brought in this guy.
Well, what the hell are we supposed to do, you moron?
Doug.
Just memorized by one line.
You cannot shoot a scene where they leave their dates behind at a black nightclub. I'm not having this discussion.
Man.
Okay, Doug.
Chris.
I can't stand by while someone refuses to have a discussion.
Just calm down, Brad.
This goes too far. You put this in front of an audience and we will have race riots.
More like laugh riots, am I right?
Doug, we're handling it.
Who the fuck is this?
Doug Kenny, Chagrin Falls, Ohio. Hey, nice arm. You play tennis?
Damn right I play tennis.
Doug is one of the writers.
And why is he annoying me?
I ask myself the same thing. Actually, you wouldn't pay to have writers on set. I'm here as an actor. It's a loophole. Now, as for this nightclub scene, hey, it's funny and it's honest. And I say this not only as a writer of the film, but as a black man.
I'm not risking the studio's reputation over a college movie. Period. End of conversation. No.
Doug?
As Brad storms off, Doug scampers over to craft services. He surveys a table of food, then grabs a fruit cup. He chucks it at an actor. The actor looks up, and Doug points to Brad. John Belushi in a toga.
Food fight!
Needless to say, the studio suits didn't like us. But fuck them. We were making a movie.
A marching band hits a brick wall.
Animal House was the culmination of everything we had written about in the magazine. It was about power and class. The individual versus authority. Nostalgia for some innocent time that never really existed. It was subversive. It celebrated chaos. It was America in a nutshell. Also, tits.
July 1978, Doug and Catherine watch a screening.
It shot to the top of the box office and stayed there, becoming the biggest comedy in movie history.
Catherine and Doug share a smile. Then fans mob the cast.
How did it feel to make a smash hit movie? Pretty fucking great. There was just one problem. Where do you go from there?
Doug wanders a party.
The full fondue set. Up with 8 forks. It's cast iron.
Wow, sounds like it's all really finally happening for
you. Brad hugs him.
Oh, shit. I knew it. I knew we had something special.
And I always knew that you would know that.
The kids are rioting in the aisles.
Yeah, at least they weren't race riots, huh?
Give me a break. You thought I was worried about that? I wasn't worried about that. In fact, we had a screen for Richard Pryor. He thought it was fine.
I mean, that's one cool cat.
Yeah.
He's a cool, cool cat.
Yeah. Hey, what are we doing next?
Well, you're a tool. So.
Great title.
Yeah, write it up. That's fun.
Oh, it's nothing but a college movie.
Tony stands with PJ as Doug finds Catherine.
You couldn't ask me for a rewrite? A couple of jokes?
Did I tell you how much I loved your movie?
Oh, the movie's not important. What's important is you and how much you love my movie. Okay, now listen, I made a big decision in the last 40 seconds. I feel very strongly about it. You are gonna come live with me in LA.
You wanna move to Los Angeles?
No. LA, you know, Louisiana. They got Gator on a stick down there. Think about it, a stick.
You crazy son of a bitch.
Listen, Maddie, I wanted to tell you first, I think it's time to move to Hollywood.
We are thinking alike. I'm gonna open an office in Beverly Hills. We are gonna hit it.
No. I'm leaving National Lampoon. For good this time.
Well, we got a hit movie, okay? Now's not the time to leave. Now's the time to make more.
You'll make other movies. They just won't involve me.
What about the magazine?
Oh, Weight Watchers will be fine without me.
What about our magazine?
I know, I'm sorry.
No, come on, you need me, Doug.
I know, you need me. I do, you're wonderful.
Maddie scoffs as Catherine and Doug stride out of the party with wide smiles. Catherine puts on sunglasses and Doug takes off his jacket to reveal a Hawaiian print shirt underneath. They stroll onto a sunny studio lot surrounded by palm trees. Catherine gives him a kiss and jogs off as Doug continues on past set designers and golf carts. He walks into an office where Chevy Chase reads on the couch.
All right, what do you say, kid? Let's make a picture, huh?
Himalayan Zen Buddhists who can down airplanes with their minds.
You can't tell me that's not a movie you wouldn't see. It's a lot of negatives.
I don't disagree.
Okay, well, we could also talk about the prep school script or the treatment from Jules Pfeiffer or the, you know, Chris's thing about the resort.
I've got some work we should get to first. Let me just move these.
He swipes the scripts onto the floor and sets down his briefcase. He opens it to reveal a mirror and large bag of cocaine. He taps out a line.
If I must.
Doug snorts it. Now, a woman dives into a sunny pool as other partygoers drink, chat, play music, and do drugs. Sitting alone in his bedroom, Doug dials his phone and fidgets as he waits.
Hey, Mom. Hey. Yeah, no. Catherine's out of town. She's shooting a movie. Yeah. Hey, so, listen. Did they finish building the pool? Does Dad like it? Like, is it big enough? Like, you know, I made sure they were gonna do it nice and big. Has he like been out there yet? Is that? Oh. No. No. Tomorrow's fine. No. I mean, Mom.
He looks at the receiver, then hangs up. Chris finds Doug doing a line off the cover of Lord of the Rings.
Hey, Doug, I got your notes. Also kind of feels like you didn't really read the whole script.
He wipes his nose.
Doug.
Hey. Hey, you want to see what $2,000 of cocaine looks
no,
like?
No, I really want to talk about the script. Wow, that's a lot of cocaine.
Spend my money on something.
Gotta go.
Are we really not going to talk about the script?
Always go with your worst instincts.
Chris throws up his arms as Chevy steps past him and scoops coke onto a snack plate. Out front, Catherine gets out of a taxi carrying a suitcase. She stares at the house, then heads in, Doug with four girls.
Have you ever seen a person make their hand disappear?
Mm-hmm. All right.
He shoves his fist into his mouth.
Wow, don't choke on that.
He spins to Catherine.
I waited at the airport for 2 hours.
Oh, shit. I thought that was wrong.
Oh, that's all right. You were busy planning this, a welcome home party?
Exactly. Here, let me introduce you to my new friends. This is, Missy?
You wanted to be.
Catherine stalks away.
See you later, Missy.
Doug follows her into the bedroom. She sets down her bag.
Can you explain to me what is going on? Because I haven't been able to reach you all week.
Fine, you know, I'm busy. I'm Hollywood's it girl.
That's hilarious.
She slides out a bookmark.
This is a check for $186,000.
Oh, I was wondering what happened to that. That's great. Good to find $186,000, you know. Right there in the check zone, right there.
A mug.
Look at this. Have you seen this? Super weird. I would have thought that Dwight D. Eisenhower would have had, like, brains in his head. But no, this is all cocaine. Oh, come on. Come on. Oh, okay. You're very clearly upset that I'm having a party. Is that it? I'll tell him I'll leave.
No,
I'll tell him to leave.
We're talking right now.
No, I'm talking right now.
He shoves her. She shoves him back, grabs the mug, and smashes it against the wall. White powder plumes, and she puts her hands on her hips.
You need to see someone.
Oh, a shrink? Oh, so I can tell him all about how little Dougie needs to be the center of attention. No, I just need to write another movie so I can be the center of attention.
He sits at his desk.
You're going to work right now?
There's a force in the universe that makes things happen.
What?
she picks up a page that reads Caddyshack, written by Douglas Kenny and Brian Doyle Murray and Harold Ramis, on set at a golf course.
In one model of the universe, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. In the opposite direction, Danny.
Unbelievable.
Thank you very little.
And cut.
It's 48 takes. We should move on.
A couple more. Chevy, let's go again.
Excuse you?
Harold's never directed, Doug's never produced, Rodney's never acted. What could possibly go wrong?
Sure, it was a comedy about golf, but Caddyshack was personal. A chance to get back at all the snobs and idiots my dad worked for using some of America's finest comic actors.
And action. Rodney, when I call action, you need to start the scene.
Okay, fine.
All right. Action.
Hey, is this your first movie, too?
No pressure, right? All I had to do was top Animal House and make the next biggest comedy of all time.
He misses his putt.
Oh, farts. It takes a lot of energy to make a hit movie. Thankfully, to keep us going, we had energy powder.
With Doug, actors, producers, and crew snort cocaine, then race golf carts. Now, Bill Murray spots Doug rubbing his face.
Hey, Doug Kenny! There he is! Hey, buddy, how are you? The handsomest man in comedy. Some call him the king of nostalgia. A beautiful dreamer. He lives his life close to the edge. He once wrote a novel and threw it in the trash. Who does that? Doug Kenny, and here to tell Doug just how proud he is. Fresh from teaching tennis at the Chagrin Falls Country Club, this guy's sharper than a dentist drill. Harry Kenny, what you got to say, soul brother?
Son, you're a lefty weirdo. Huge disappointment.
Uh-oh, sounds bad. You heard it here first. He did not like his son. The wrong one died. Bummerski.
Faithful, baby. Faithful.
Oh, is that, could it be? Live from New York, it's Henry Beard.
In a tux.
We had a fine run, you and I.
Oh, no. I bet you wish you still had Beardy around to pick up the slack, but you drove him out of your life, just like you drove away Alex and will most likly drive away Catherine.
That thing a pattern.
It's not a pattern.
Oh, Dougie boy, the pipes are calling.
Need to decide, Doug.
Harold snaps him out of it,
Doug,
and points to a golf ball washer.
Doug, we need to decide. Is it clear he's jerking his dick off here?
Yeah, because we can make it higher or lower depending on the size of my dog.
In an office.
We can get rid of these two scenes and move this down, but then we need a transition, which we did not shoot.
Watch your first cut. All 4 hours of it.
Hi, Brad. How are you?
You know, I'm a friend of comedy. You guys know that. Okay, but you are over budget, over scheduled. This is not how we make movies here.
Brad, you better come back with a different attitude or don't come back at all.
Excuse me?
The fuck is that doing here?
That is the star of this movie, okay? I want more scenes with this little guy.
Was that what we talked about?
Okay. I hired a guy from Star Wars to build this. People are gonna love this.
A gopher toy dances.
This isn't a fucking kids movie.
I pay for this gopher, and he's gonna go on my picture.
Oh, your picture?
Kenny, this isn't your little magazine. I'm in charge.
Is that what you told your wife when you caught her fucking Peter Falk?
That's just a rumor.
Is this a cock all squinty too, huh?
Oh, I'm gonna come.
Brad lunges. A tour.
How many of you have seen National Lampoon's Animal House? Okay, well, inside that bungalow to your right, some of the creators of Animal House are working on their next movie. And I'm sure it's going to be just as crazy.
Brad and Doug fight.
Get off my wife!
Doug!
Harold tosses him the gopher, and he pummels Brad with it.
Cool!
A kid on the tour grins as the men tussle. The tour guide forces a smile as Doug lobs the gopher after Brad.
I threw a few punches, and the studio sidelined me from my own movie. So much for Hollywood glamour. And from there, things got worse. I had an experience that shook me to my very core. I saw this.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Later, Doug and Catherine leave the showing of Airplane.
What's the matter?
Nothing. It's great.
Surely you're not upset because someone else made a funny movie.
Don't you get it? That's the movie that everyone's gonna love. That fucking Caddyshack. Been replaced.
What the fuck am I gonna do now?
You're supposed to say, don't call me Shirley.
July 1980.
Hi, it's Doug. I'm gonna be in town for a couple days. I'd love to see you for, drink? Maybe a beverage? You know, I was right the first time. Let's make it a drink.
Daytime at Pete's Tavern. Doug sits alone at the nearly empty bar, sipping dark liquor. Henry walks in wearing a black suit.
Hey, look at you.
They hug.
You look great. You joined a cult.
I'm actually between cults right now.
Okay.
Get a beer?
They sit, and Henry smiles admiringly at his old friend.
Thank you. You here for the movie?
Yeah.
He downs his drink.
I have this press thing I gotta do. Oh, I can't wait for everyone to see the big fucking gopher extravaganza. Proud day.
Henry's smile fades as Doug drinks more.
You all right?
I'm fine. I mean, better than the fucking movie.
I'm sure it's great. Yeah. You wrote the most successful comedy movie of all time in your first try, so.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Henry laughs, then falls serious at Doug's sullen face.
So how about you? You still writing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little bit. I got a couple book ideas.
How about a movie? Huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, we could write one together.
Huh? I don't know. You're the movie guy now.
Oh, no. Why don't you just come out and stay with me, and we can throw around some ideas.
We're not really L.A. people.
Of course we are. What are you talking about? It's beautiful. There's the palm trees.
He plays with his drink, then notices Henry's expression.
Oh, you weren't talking about us. Okay.
I meant a lady. A woman.
Oh, my God. Lady. No, Henry Beard has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Henry Beard.
You would like her. She knows a lot about atomic energy.
Oh, so sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Well, why don't you both come stay? Why don't you come out?
Now's not a good time. We're getting the house renovated, and her daughter's in day camp.
Her daughter? You have, like, a family. You're an adult. Oh, God, that must be a lot.
It's actually easier than running a magazine.
Doug nods and finishes his liquor.
I guess so.
He sets down his glass and knocks over a glass of straws.
Pick those up if I...
Don't worry about it.
What time's your press thing?
I'm fine. Okay, I see what you're, I don't need you to take care of me, okay? Now he wants to take care of me, yeah.
I do care about you, Doug.
The men meet eyes, and Doug gives a drunken nod.
Well, too late.
You know what? I'm happy that you reached out.
Yeah, well... maybe I shouldn't have. I don't know what this feels.
What are you talking about? Really?
Here.
Doug. You can call me anytime.
Doug stands and gives Henry a dazed look before grabbing the whiskey bottle and heading out.
Yeah, take this.
Hey.
It's all right. I got it. Should we call you a cab?
I'm a cab.
He called himself a cab.
Henry smiles before shaking his head. At the press event, Harold mouths, "Where is he?" to Catherine, who shrugs.
All right, folks, get your questions ready for the cast and crew of Caddyshack.
Doug's parents sit next to her as the actors sit on stage.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I think we're going to get started. You've all seen the movie. It's great, isn't it? Yeah. Funny movie.
Doug stumbles in.
Oh, it sucked. Think it was terrible?
Okay, this is everyone. This is the hilarious Doug Kenny, our writer. Douglas Kenny, everyone. Okay, he's joking.
I'm not joking. Fuck this fucking movie. Fuck the gopher. It was a mechanical gopher. It's not even a real gopher. It's a piece of shit.
I think this guy's a couple sandwiches short of a picnic.
That's the kind of shit that's in the movie. That's you guys, come on. What are you doing in there? Are you talking about what a piece of shit it is?
Let's go.
Is that, no. I know I'm saying what a piece of shit it is a bunch, but I'm very proud of it. Just because I've, it's like my baby. It's like a shit baby that I've laid out there. I'm really proud of it. And I know we all are.
Doug.
His mother.
That's enough.
What are you guys doing here?
You tell us.
Doug, you begged us to come.
I did?
They stare at him as he sinks into a shrug.
Well, I guess you're right all along, huh? It's a big fucking waste of time.
His father averts his eyes.
It's a fucking piece of shit.
He staggers and falls.
Oh, okay, hey.
Get him the hell out of here, please.
Chevy takes off his mic and hurries over.
Okay, sorry, everybody. Yeah, well, just, let's...
Buddy, why don't we go get some rest somewhere?
We should work together again, huh?
Harold gives Rodney Dangerfield an incredulous look as Chevy and Catherine guide Doug out. Now, sun shines on lush mountains, Kauai, Hawaii. Chevy and Doug play tennis.
Blowjob. Cocksucker! Rim licker! Come on my face! Swollen balls! Balls on my face!
Ronald Reagan!
Chevy!
Later, they sit in lounge chairs by a pool.
What is today?
Well, it's Russian solstice, so... 6. No. It's a 2. I... Dinosaur is... No. Oh, I got it. Doug. It's Thursday.
6 days clean.
Feels good.
It feels great.
I haven't felt this healthy in years.
I feel like myself again.
I think we should...
I'll call my guy.
Now, Chevy slices open a box and pops a tube of tennis balls. He tosses one to Doug, who slices it open and dumps out cocaine.
We'll just have the one ball, right?
One ball.
They snort lines, then stand staring into a mirror.
You're the handsomest man in comedy.
Second handsomest.
6, 7, 7.
Chevy bounces a ball as Doug throws things at him.
Are you bothering him?
No.
He throws balls at him.
83, 84, 85, 82, 83, 84, 85.
Doug slaps the ball.
You win. Caddyshack. Never finds a consistent comic note of its own, but it plays host to all sorts of approaches from its stars, who sometimes hardly seem to be occupying the same movie.
I just think it's weird the Pope is weighing in on this at all.
With a towel covering his face under his glasses, he pours a martini glass of nuts into his mouth.
Oh, it was so rude of me. I never even offered you any nuts.
He showers them on Chevy.
So what else did the Pope have to say? Anything worth note?
Catherine.
Doug?
He takes the towel off and looks dazedly at Catherine in his trashed hotel room.
Hey.
Hi.
What's up, baby? Hey. Oh.
He hugs her.
Wait, where's Chevy?
I thought he left last night.
Oh, yeah, last night, of course. Yeah. Oh, hey. God, look at this place. Chevy forgot to ask him to vacuum and stuff. He obviously did not vacuum. And he forgot to do it, so let me just clean it up a little. There we go. And then let's go snorkeling. Right? Oh, that's good to see you.
Now they walk along the beach.
Once the new house is furnished, I thought maybe we could throw a party. Maybe over Labor Day. You'll be back home by then?
Yeah, of course. I think so.
Doug.
She stops walking.
You need to decide.
Furniture? Don't make me choose between Pennsylvania Dutch and Colonial. No, I'm torn.
You need to decide if you're serious about getting better. You can't just stay here forever.
It's a tropical paradise. I mean, the coconuts literally grow on trees.
Stop.
She searches his haggard face with a concerned look.
You don't understand.
Then tell me. What don't I understand? Tell me.
I'm not good at, you know, this.
What is this?
This, you know, this. Relationships, you know, talking about my feelings. You want me to come back? I want to come back. I can't come back a failure.
In what world are you a failure? You need to get it together, okay?
Definitely. Yes. Yes.
He looks away.
Look, if you can't have a real conversation with me, you gotta talk to someone.
Yeah, well, who would I talk to?
I don't know. Can you call Henry?
Doug gives a somber nod.
Just call him, okay?
In a bathrobe, Doug watches from his balcony as Catherine climbs into the back of a cab. He waves and she blows a kiss as the cab rolls away. In his room, Doug bounces a ball off the wall. With a bored look, he bounces and catches it over and over. Later, he lies on the floor and eats an apple. Then he sits on a floor with a shadeless lamp and watches TV. In various places around the room, he jots on a notepad. He writes, "These are some of the happiest days I've ever ignored." Sitting, he throws the tennis ball against the wall. Room service.
Beautiful day today. You going surfing?
I was thinking about going hiking, actually.
Sounds nice. Where are you from?
Chagrin Falls, Ohio.
Now, he drives a white Jeep down a dirt road through a lush jungle. He pulls up and stops near a sign that reads, Hanapepe Lookout. Behind the wheel, he stares out with a serious expression. He climbs out, then sits at the edge of the lookout, gazing out over the green cliffs and a cascading waterfall in the distance. With dark circles under his eyes, he takes off his glasses. The view goes blurry.
No, I'll pass. Isn't downhill skiing just a competition to see who can get to the hospital first?
Henry hosts a small dinner party.
Excuse me.
Henry's more of a sailor.
He answers the phone. His casual smile drops from his lips as his expression darkens. He looks at the floor, shutting his eyes. At the lookout, Doug's shoes and glasses sit in a patch of sunlight. A funeral program reads, "In loving memory of Douglas Clark Kenny." Outside the funeral home, a banner says, "Welcome, Kenny mourners." Anne, Chevy, and Harold smoke outside.
No, he fell. I was with him 2 days before.
Right.
That's not the state he
was
in.
Well, I think he jumped.
No, he got high and he went too far like
Please.
He always does, and he fell.
He probably fell while he was looking for a place to jump.
Anne stubs out her cigarette and walks inside past other mourners. She squeezes the arm of Peter Ivers playing harmonica, then passes Gilda, then Chris Miller. As Tony peruses the buffet, Michael marches up in dark sunglasses.
How can you eat shrimp at a time like this?
Tony gives a sad smile.
We gave them our golden boy, and they sent back his body.
You know, the saddest part of this whole thing is that he wasn't holding hands with Chevy when he went off that cliff.
Maddie.
He was like a son to me. I loved him. Oh, sometimes I wanted to cut the brakes on his car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without telling him.
You know how that sounds.
A boxing phenomenon who desperately wants to work at a brassiere factory.
This is a movie idea.
Brian stares.
Yes.
Doug stands at his own coffin, watching the crowd with a somber look. Old Doug appears beside him.
Nice suit.
You can see me?
Mm-hmm. I'm the older you. If you didn't, you know.
So you're...
Yeah, a narrative device.
It's a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, look at this. You were beloved by so many white people.
Old Doug sips a drink with a cocktail umbrella.
If it's any consolation, years from now, people really like Caddyshack. They're kind of annoying about it, actually.
Doug gives a distracted nod, then watches his parents approach the coffin.
Go ahead, talk to him.
He gently steps behind his mother and father. His mother holds back tears with a mournful expression, while his father looks sadly confused.
Well, now you have a match set.
He was so loved.
Doug's father looks past him to the crowd of mourners.
And all these people, they all loved him.
He turns back to the casket, covering his face with his hand as his wife squeezes his shoulder. Doug turns away to see Catherine crying into Chevy's shoulder.
Every funny person in the world is here. No one's laughing.
Peter and Lucy hold each other sadly.
You know, he's right. Come on, people. Laugh, goddammit. Come on, somebody.
Henry wanders in. Looking relieved, Doug finds him at the buffet table. He steps close to his old friend.
Henry, I'm sorry about everything. I know you accept my apology. I mean, you were wrong too. You know, we don't have to get into that now. But this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture.
Henry reaches for a handful of cocktail shrimp to put on his plate.
Henry.
He slowly turns away from the table. He scans the crowd of mourners, then winds up and chucks the shrimp at them. They turn to stare, and he puffs his chest with a nod. John Belushi looks around.
Food fight!
People beeline for the buffet table, grabbing handfuls of hors d'oeuvres and tossing them across the room. Holding full food trays, the guests nail people at close range as a constant stream of food arches overhead.
Starlight and dewdrops waiting for thee.
Tony chucks something gooey at Harold, who smashes a pie into his face. Catherine laughs hysterically as she blocks her face from a stream of coleslaw, and Chevy upends a veggie tray. Chris Miller flings food from a tin tray as Doug's mom winces. Doug's dad gleefully throws frosting at Mary Marshmallow's cleavage, and she gapes. Doug's mom strikes back at Chris Miller as Anne and Michael make out amidst the chaos. The view cuts through the guests, all laughing as they pummel each other with food. Beyond Henry, who throws food from the back of the pack, Doug stands in the aisle beside old Doug.
Wake unto me.
Beauty. In matching suits, with their hands folded politely, they smile contentedly over the crowd.
To me.
A futile and stupid gesture.
If I woke up to find that it's all been a joke.
Directed by David Wayne, written by Michael Colton and John Aboud, based on the book by Josh Karp. Produced by Peter Principato, Jonathan Stern, and Ted Sarandos. Executive producers Ben Ormond, Pauline Fisher, Colin Creighton, Michael Colton, John Aboud, David Wayne, Edward H. Hamm Jr., Sean McKittrick, and Ed Helms.
Hey, I've had a hell of a ride.
Director of Photography, Kevin Atkinson. Production designer, Jonah Markowitz. Edited by David Egan, Jamie Gross, and Robert Nassau. Costume designer, Deborah McGuire. Music supervisor, Alexandra Pizzavis. Music by Craig Wedren. Casting by Allison Jones.
Had a beautiful wife, pockets full of money.
Will Forte, Donald Gleason, Martin Mull, Neil Casey, John Daly, Nelson Franklin, John Gemberling, Rick Glassman, Seth Green, Max Greenfield, Harry Groner, Camille Gawati, Ed Helms, Thomas Lennon, Joe Latrulio, Matt Lucas, Natasha Leone, Joel McHale, Annette O'Toole, Emmy Rossum, Jackie Tone, Matt Walsh, Finn Wittrock, Elvie Yost.
I fucking own this place. And if I fall off a cliff, and I'm saying if, It was just what I wanted to do. I had the time of my life. All my dreams came true.
A Principato Young Entertainment Abominable Pictures production. More credits roll.
Never had a problem. I never had a care. Still can wear my high school jeans, and I still have all my hair. And when they lower the lid on all that I did, well, I promise you, kid, that it's true. I've had the time of my life, 'cause that's what dreamers do. I've had the time of my life. Yeah, 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 just the time of my life. Yeah, 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 I had the time of my life. Yeah, 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 I had the time of my life. What you have?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
I had
the time of my life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
what you have?
Time of my life.
Good. Yeah, 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 I had the time of my life. Yeah, 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 I had the time of my life.
Yeah, 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 I had the time of my life.
Oh, yeah, 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 I had the time of my life.
Old Doug plays guitar at the funeral as Doug and the mourners sing along.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
it was the time of my life. I had the time of my life.
Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.